go grab it if we need it. How are you?
What do you need to know?
You've been in this one before, so it shouldn't have been too hard. You were looking for something like the LDS conference center.
No, not today. It's all right here.
Well, what we ought to what we'll do is just mail them out to them if they're not
used. If they're not used, and then we'll do that. I know
he won't be there.
Okay.
And
there's two priorities here. I've got your travel reimbursement.
You got mine?
And just look over it, make sure it's correct.
That's your travel
reimbursement.
Okay. And these two are shared.
These guys are both from Heber, and they come together. And I don't know if they're going to be here or not. So. They do it for you, and that's what I'm working with.
Okay, that's why it's
just a minute to see if that was our Heber guys just driving in the driveway.
Hey, Dennis.
Are you serious?
Here's my computer. It's got on here their records, their harvest stuff. If John needs a question, somebody asks a question about another unit that's not in our region, could you kind of help support him?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and get started, if we might. It's a little tough to see in here because of the pillar in the center of the room. So if you want to reconnoiter yourself to a better seat, feel free to do that so that we can see you and you can see us a little bit better. Plenty of seats up here on the front row. I'd like to welcome you all out to the Central RAC meeting. We're pleased to have you here. Before we go any further, I'd like to have the RAC members introduce themselves to you. So starting on my far right with Larry.
Larry Fitzgerald, representing agriculture.
Richard Hanson at large.
Carl Hurst, representing sportsmen.
Dwayne Smith, non-consumptive.
Matt Clark, sportsman.
Chris Marvel, at large.
Tim Fair, at large.
Sarah Flinders, U.S. Forest Service.
A couple of our members that I'd like to excuse tonight. Gary Nelson, is our vice chair, is not here tonight. He is recovering from a hip replacement operation that he had today. So we wish him well. And also, Michael Gates has asked to be excused tonight. In addition to that, the guy that normally sits on my right-hand side, John Fairchild, is not able to be with us tonight. And filling in for him tonight ably is Craig Clyde. So, Craig, thanks for being up here in front. Also like to acknowledge and thank John Baer, Wildlife Board member from this region, for being here tonight. Thank you, John. I appreciate you being here at our meetings. Looks like George has just walked in.
Yes, I have.
Want to introduce yourself?
George Holmes.
Thank you. And where's your twin brother tonight?
He is watching out for us in other areas.
All right. We will excuse Jay Price. So again, thank you all for being here, and RAC members, thank you for being here for our last meeting of the year. I'd like to go over quickly the agenda. I don't have copies for you tonight, so let me just tell you how we're going to proceed. We'll have approval of the agenda and approval of last time's minutes. We will then have a Wildlife Board update that I will basically let you and the RAC members know what happened at the last Wildlife Board meeting. We'll then have a regional update of things that have been happening in our region since the last time we met, and we'll ask Craig to do that regional update for us. And then tonight we will have two action items, the Baer recommendations for 2012, and John Shivik, who is our Game Mammals Coordinator, new Game Mammals Coordinator, will be making that presentation. And congratulations, John, on your new assignment. And then finally, our Falconry Guidebook and Rule will be presented by Jim Parrish, our Avens Coordinator. So with that in mind, I'll go ahead and ask for a recommendation for our an approval for our last minutes and agenda.
So moved.
A move by Tim to approve the minutes and tonight's agenda. And a second from Michael.
Matt.
I'm sorry, from Matt. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? And it passes unanimously. So we'll go ahead and move on to Wildlife Board meeting update. Let me basically tell you what the motions were at the Wildlife Board meeting that was held on December 2nd in Salt Lake. First of all, there was a motion that we asked the DWR to bring out more flexible general season deer unit buck doe ratio proposal or alternative versus the current general season unit standard of 18 to 25 bucks per 100 doe. So this was basically a recommendation that we, from the board, to ask the DWR to come in with a more flexible way of establishing the standard. The current way to do that is with the 18 to 25 bucks per 100 doe. This proposal will be taken to the RACs at our May meeting for discussion and action. And that motion passed 5-1. Then there was a motion to approve the Bucks Bulls season dates and application deadline that we also approved unanimously. And that motion was passed unanimously by the board. Next, there was a motion to move that the division to report back on the 9 mile range creek change to any bull relative to all issues with regard to hunting, trespass, harvest, and hunter satisfaction. That motion passed unanimously, and the division will report back to the board on their recommendation with regard to 9 mile range creek. Then there was a motion to approve the allocation of the Alton CWM unit to four private permits and one public permit from their, which was what they were current, what they currently had from last year. And that motion was passed 5-1. There was a motion to approve the CWMU management plan and permit numbers, and that motion passed unanimously. And then finally, there was a motion to approve the landowner permit numbers, including the Diamond Mountain variance, and that motion passed 5-1. Any additions or corrections, John? And any questions? And any questions from RAC members on what happened at the last board meeting? Richard.
What does that mean to be flexible? You mean they can change the 50 units so that their target would be 1,500 loads?
It means that the board was asking for more flexibility. Right now it's 18-25, but how that will look actually is unknown, and I don't know. But before the board takes any action on it, it will come before this RAC in May so that you guys will be able to see that in some detail. But I don't know what it's going to look like, and I don't think anybody does.
Basically just asking the division if there was another way. There's been some discussion, instead of doing it just 18-25 across the board for every unit, what would it look like if, say, we had some for 15-18, some 18-20? If you're just going to do it that way, what would it look like? And we just asked them to draw that up and bring it back to us so we could look at it just to see. Just as another option, just to kind of flesh it out a little further. So.
Thanks, John. Okay, we'll move on, and I'll ask Craig to update us with regard to what's been happening in the region since we last met.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In our region, we have five sections: the wildlife section, habitat section, aquatics, conservation outreach, and law enforcement. Within our law enforcement section, we did a special West Desert saturation patrol involving all of the officers that was just completed. We saturated the West Desert on a 24-hour period to kind of target some areas that we may have poaching problems, to kind of just look at it. Also, this was first of many efforts to increase law enforcement presence in high-risk poaching areas. The officers are working on several illegal taken deer and elk cases region-wide. A lot of those stem from our recent hunts this fall. Conservation outreach, the hunter-shooter recruitment committee, still working on a pilot project for the central region. Unit-by-unit outreach efforts are underway. There's a facts and questions page on our DWR website. If you're interested in, you could take a look at that. Promotional campaign to increase awareness of deer poaching problems on winter range statewide. And we're partnershiping with conservation organizations with that effort. In aquatics, conservation easement acquisition and monitoring continues along the Upper Sandpitch River. As a way to protect the habitat and sensitive aquatic species. Carp removal on Utah Lake is on hold while the ice forms. It was a banner year this year for carp removal with 174 days of trawling, and many of those days were over 30,000 pounds harvested. Reservoirs are still open at this point to good fishing on rainbows at Deer Creek. Large browns, 5 to 7 pounds, are being caught at Jordanelle, rainbows and cutthroat at Strawberry, and last but not least, 7 to 9 inch bluegills are taken in large numbers in the tributaries coming into Utah Lake. Our habitat section, Black Hill Wildlife Management Area Access Management Project is completed, and now just needs support from our local sportsmen to implement the plan. Most division-owned wildlife management areas will be locked up this weekend and will remain closed until actually April, the spring thaw. We left them open a little bit longer this year to try to accommodate some of the hunters getting into our management areas to be able to have access to the elk herds and the numbers that we need to reduce elk by. That would have been helpful for us. And with the light winter, we anticipated less damage to the roads. We continue to work with UDOT to identify high-risk areas for big game along Highways 6, 80, and 189 to recommend mitigation structures and fences to include future projects, and finalizing habitat project proposals for the watershed restoration program in 2013. In wildlife, we're still in the middle of our deer post-season deer classification. It will continue through to the end of this month. Deer are going into the winter in good condition. This mild winter, the herds are looking good. Hopefully it stays that way for a while. The fat index on our checking stations showed that they were in good condition going in. Deer capture operations on the Oker Stansberries and the Wasatch and North Manti were just completed this last week, where radio collars were put on fawns, where the radio collars on does and fawns will be monitored to determine adult survival and fawn recruitment to the herd. We're putting together a special bighorn sheep ram hunt on the Lakeside Mountains, which are just north of I-80 and west of the Great Salt Lake. We've had sheep show up there that have been exposed to domestic sheep. We don't want them crossing the freeway and getting with the wild sheep on the north end of the Stansberries. So we're putting together a hunt, and we'll call the hunter that would be next on the list to have drawn the Stansberry unit to be able to hunt the Lakeside Mountains and take a ram off of there. One other thing I just wanted to mention real quickly, Dr. Smith brought in an email that he had received, and this is kind of going around and why I wanted to mention it. It's about wolf sightings. A hunter on a cow hunt reported seeing tracks of wolves up by 4th and 5th Water. It's not our first report, and we were aware of this. A year and a half ago, we had a hunter turn in a picture from a trail cam during his elk hunt that he took pictures of a wolf. We send that picture off to Wyoming to confirm that what they felt that was a wolf as well. Then that wolf disappeared. We never had any other reports from it, and we were hoping it went back. Then we started getting reports this last year, quite a few different reports. So we put up cameras up in the waters areas. We ran those cameras for 2 months. Never got a picture of a wolf. We got lots of other pictures, thousands of them, but no wolves. Then recently, this picture that's going around now showed up of someone pushing 7 wolves down the road in their truck, and didn't get pictures of the wolves, but got pictures of tracks. And we now have cameras set up there to look that situation and see what we can find. Just something that we are keeping our hands on the pulse and see what happens. We're not ready to confirm it yet, but it's possible. And we want to learn this so that we can notify Fish and Wildlife Service to remove the wolves, which they'll have to just say, they'll probably just say no, because the wolves are under their jurisdiction, and we can't do anything other than notify them. But we want to be sure of what we find before we do that. Because of those rumors going around, I wanted just to let the REC members know what we're doing along those lines. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Craig. Questions for Craig from the REC? If not, we'll go ahead and move on. Let me just quickly go through our meeting framework for those of you who have not been to a REC meeting before. We have 2 agenda items tonight. For each one of those agenda items, staff from the DWR will give a 10 or 15 minute presentation offering background information and the proposals from the division. At the end of the presentation, I'll ask the RAC members if they have any questions or points of clarification to the presenter, and then I'll ask the audience members if any of you have either questions or points of clarification for the presenter. If you have a question, I'd ask you to come up to this microphone here, identify yourself, and go ahead and ask your question or point of clarification. This isn't the time when we take your comments. It's just for questions and clarification. Once the question period is over, I'll close the question, and then we'll open it up for your comments. We're happy to have you here tonight, and we do invite you to make a comment. If you represent a group here tonight, we'd ask you to limit your comments to no more than 5 minutes. If you're representing yourself, please limit your comments to not more than 3 minutes. In other words, try and be precise and get your points across as quickly as possible. Let us know who you are and what organization you represent. After all of the public comments have been taken, we'll come back to the RAC members for their discussion and any motions that they would like to make with regard to the two presentations tonight. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and go to our first action item, and we'll ask... Oh, I'm sorry. If you do have a comment to make tonight, we have some yellow comment cards here at the table. And if you would please fill out one of those comment cards and set it back on the table and try and fill one of those out before you make your comments. Okay, we'll go ahead with the bear recommendations. And John, we'll invite you to go ahead and make your presentation.
Thank you. Good evening. It's good to see you all. So what I'm going to go do tonight is go over a little bit of some of the background of the new bear management plan. This it's a little bit more complicated than just recommendations. I've got some other background and things I need to talk about because this plan was just adopted in January of this year, and this is the first time that it's being implemented. Also, the plan's very interesting because it tries to sort of push the envelope a little bit and try to get some more tools and some more things out there for the division to use. So that being said, basically, if I had to boil the plan down into an essence, basically it's a thing being used to try to balance the need to reduce human bear conflict, to maximize recreational opportunities, but at the same time to protect our bear populations. So it's trying to balance what are sometimes even opposing things. And in terms of applying the plan, the biological basis of it is very important to understand. And that is that males and females have differential susceptibility to harvest. Everything in this world, as far as setting permits and everything, it's based on that one little aspect about bear biology. So what we see, if we're in a place where there is a liberal harvest, that they're really being hit hard, you'll see a high proportion of females taken. Whereas if there's another area where there's a light harvest, it's not being hunted very heavily, you'll see relatively more adult bears taken. And this has to do with, especially earlier in the spring, the males, especially surplus males, getting out more, wandering more, and being more susceptible for that way. And all this came out of research out of Idaho, essentially. So knowing this, we can use these ratios to assess and adjust our harvest levels. So, in terms of the plan's a stepwise strategy. The first thing that each region needs to do, the biologists select a harvest strategy at the unit level. And there's a couple sideboards on this. Again, most of our decisions, the plan really dictates how much we can go one way or the other, and it really sets how we can go forward with things. And relative to the division of hunts by harvest strategy, they can be light, moderate, or liberal. And our proportions are dictated that we need to have less than 25% of our hunts in light, greater than 50% in moderate, and less than 25% in liberal. So it divides up this state into, for instance, 75% of it in light or moderate categories. in order to monitor the and help or keep populations okay. Well, okay, so how do we put a unit into one of these strategies? Light, the biologists in the region look at the unit, and they say, okay, it's got low human-bear conflict, or there's low population, or we want this to be a source population for other units. Then it fits into a light category. Okay. Then moderate has moderate levels of human-bear conflict and a stable bear population. Those units will fit there. And then liberal are the units that tend to have a high levels of human-bear conflict or an increasing bear population or something that would make us want to harvest that thing a little bit more intensively. So after the regions first selected its harvest strategy, they make permit recommendations that are adjusted based on the harvest results, and which is made from a three-year average in relation to the performance targets in the harvest strategy. And so then now we have to remember our proportions again, that first point I made at the beginning. The light, moderate, and liberal each has a certain proportion of adult males, which are greater than 5 years, and females in that we want to see in our harvest. So for instance, we take our last 3 years, and we can say, just by way of example, walk through one, let's say we want to manage a unit to be moderate. We take our last 3 years and we find out that we've had 30% adult males taken. And so 30% is right in there, right where it's supposed to be. But let's say we saw 28% females. Well, for a moderate category, the cutoff is 30% and it's taken 28. That means our females are down in the light. So that means, and this is just how the plan dictates things, that the males are in the range where they're supposed to be, the females are out of the range. So that's one in, one out, and we'd adjust the permits by somewhere between 0 and 20% according to those rules. And so we just adjust it up to put a little more pressure and get the females into where they're supposed to be in moderate. And then if both are outside the range, we might adjust the permits a little bit more. So it's just a real stepwise progression. Then the next step in determining our permits has to do with a population density study. We have other information that we're trying to include into the process as well to add as additional information to help us manage it even better. This is a process that we can adjust the permits based on this density study, which is a three-year growth rate. Again, this is supplemental information. This is the one where we use hair snares. In each region, we have a representative sampling area. So hair snares are put out. We can collect the hairs from the bears. We can use genetics. We can use a DNA analysis to identify each individual bear and then do mark recapture estimates, which is a way of estimating what the growth rate is within that region. And then we can see our growth rates and use that to adjust our permits up or down. Now, one thing about this process is that it's not very exact. It's not down to 1% or 2%. We're feeling confident if we're within about plus or minus 10%. So that's sort of the magic number with this one. If a growth rate is more than 10%, or if it's going down by more than 10%, that's when we kick in and adjust permits. So anything less than that, we won't adjust the permits. And again, if we get higher up outside of that 10% range, you'll adjust it higher than if it's only, say, 15% growth rate or 25% growth rate. Then the next step has to do with a permit adjustment made on the results of our bear recruitment study. And here, this is another supplemental work that's in progress. And people know, I think a lot of us in the room would be familiar with bear biology and knowing that they'll reproduce in pulses. You'll have some good years, a few good years in a row, and you'll have good reproduction, and then you might have a few years and you not have as good a reproduction. So what we do is we monitor in each of the regions. We focus on at least 25 bears to try to get 5 bears in each region with collars on. We can go in, pull the dens, and count cubs, essentially, and then see if we have a growth pulse. That is greater than 40% of those adult males having yearlings. So if there's no pulse within 5 years, we adjust down by 20%. That means that the population isn't, you know, bumping up. And if there's two pulses within 5 years, it seems like they're growing really good, so we might adjust up the population the permits by 20, 30%. Now, this one, I say, is a work in progress because we need, if you notice, this 5 years, and we're only on our first year into this new plan. So this is going to, you're going to see this develop more as we cycle through this process. but it's important to realize. Other things that the plan dictates that we do are explore extended spring seasons. This is chiefly, well, it's actually identified as a tool to be used in areas with a lot of nuisance complaints. So we can go in there and harvest a little more heavily due to that. And then the second technique that we've been told to do or directed to do through the plan is using harvest objective approaches. Again, these are quota type hunts. And the three quotas that we are set up to test are, one is a standard, so we just have a set number of animals that we that are harvested, and then once that quota is achieved, the hunt stops. There's the split, where it's combined with a limited entry in terms of calculating the numbers. And then the female sub-quota, where, for instance, we have a unit where we are recommending 10 overall bears or a sub-quota of 4 females. So the hunt would stop when we reach 10 or when we reach 4 females, whichever came first. Now, the plan does say that we need to investigate these. So this is our first cycle into this. We have to use one of each, or we have to use one of each of these throughout the state. And then we're going to assess after this first cycle and see how well each of them works, and then use that to go forward. Then the third thing has to do with spot and stalk hunts. And the idea of the spot and stalk hunts is to provide some, right now, additional opportunity for folks to get out into the field and try to hunt a bear. There are any weapon, but no hounds and no bait, as they're currently recommended. Okay. So there's the background. That's how we put it together. What did we come up with this year for putting in place? Now, the statewide distribution of our strategies, light 13%, moderate 65%, liberal 22%. And I would refer you to your packet and materials and handouts if you want to go through unit by unit. I'm just giving a summary of everything here, so we won't go into that much detail, but you have all the information that you need to look at each unit and the permits. So again, we come up with that 78% or so in light or moderate. Then we used our permits for the last 3 years and take and percentages for the last 3 years. So I put the permit numbers up here just to kind of have a general comparison in terms of limited entry permits. And we can see the numbers that we've been dealing with. And the thing that's pretty interesting, as we look at the harvest ratios over the last 3 years, that adult males, 41%, which puts them into the moderate category, and the adult female, or in the females, 29%, which puts them into the light category, which means that overall, historically, over the last several years, anyway, 3 years, we've been hunting, harvesting statewide in a light to moderate sort of framework. The population growth rate study, again, we had insufficient data for all 5 of the regions. 2 of them, though, came through fine, and we're confident with the numbers, but neither of them busted through that magic 10% increase or decrease, so we didn't need to adjust any permits on those regions. The denning, again, as I hinted at before, insufficient data for now. We don't have enough collars and animals out there and enough years to make any adjustments, but again, this you'll see this more as time goes on. So, overall summary, according to the plan, we calculate our permits using those sex ratios. If we come up with just limited entry, so if we're only counting the limited entry permits that were added, we're up to 494 permits now, which puts an increase of about 11% over last year. And then, again, the harvest objectives, we don't know, you know, how many permits are going to come out of that or how successful our spot and stocks are going to be. So I didn't put that number in there just so it's easier to compare. 12 of the units ended up with spring seasons. As I said, we have our 3 quota units, and we've got 2 new spot and stalk units that I'll talk about a little bit too. And then something that was a question before in terms of summer training sessions for hounds, we've kept that open pretty much as it had been, except for a notable difference in the LaSalle and San Juan. And I'll go into a little more detail on that. Again, the details for all the units are in your packet. But just for just kind of to see how things are working out, I pulled a typical unit here, and then this dates for the limited entry standard one, April 7th and May 29th. If this was extended, it would just go another 5 days. Then the fall limited entries, the early and then late. and then it divides up into permits. I did not, I combined in-state and out-of-state permits together, so you won't see that split out, but I think it's easier just to see the whole lump so you can compare easier. And then again, there are spring pursuits and our conservation and our premium permits. So the extended spring seasons, those were done. I just pulled this out to show you how they're distributed across the state. In the northern region, there's a couple, and then northeast four, and central three, and southern two. So the idea here is they're fairly spread out, more or less evenly across the state or uniformly. Now, the harvest objective units. Again, we had to make three of these, and we used our best available information to identify which kind of hunt would work the best in each region. And currently, the recommendation is for the Wasatch, Current, and Opequan to be the standard quota. It's going to run in spring. Our female subquota unit will be on the beaver, and that's in the fall, October 6th to November 20th. And then our split unit will be on the 9 mile in October 6th to 20th. There will be some board approval to move some conservation permits around since there won't be a spring limited entry on the Wasatch because the harvest objective has taken it over. Okay, now spot and stock units. The two that were added this year, La Salle and San Juan. And basically, La Salle San Juan has their limit spring dates and fall dates. These dates, you'll notice there is a little bit of an adjustment here, bumped a little earlier, ended a little sooner compared to the other ones, largely to deal with some of the conflicts and sort of the unique circumstances that we have in those two regions, or two units, I'm sorry. And then the spot and stock was added, putting in 30 permits for each of those. Now, the other thing, I've got one other thing we had to consider this year, and these are data that came up that got us scratching our heads and thinking we need to investigate what's going on. Now, the background is, and this has to do with summer pursuit. You tend to have, if we have bad forage years, you might have incidents of bears coming into town and causing problems and things. But when we looked at the La Salle and San Juan, the bear incidents before there were any summer pursuits averaged about 2 per year. After the summer pursuits happened or were instituted, you can see they bumped up and they averaged 10 per year. Now, this is one of those things that, you know, there's not a demonstration of cause and effect here, but it may got people's attention. We know when we go out and do the pursuits, bears are moving around, but the question is there are there too many bears being moved into town, or is that actually a cause and effect thing? So rather than completely shut everything off and not do it at all, or just ignore it and say that there's nothing really happening since we can't prove it, we're recommending doing some alterations in the permits to try to investigate this a little bit more. So again, more or less hypothesis here is as you increase the number of permits, as the permits go this way, the bears in town go this way. And that's what happened on the La Salle, and that's what happened on the San Juan. So here's what we're recommending. 60% reduction in permits on one unit, and then no reduction on the other unit, and then alternating, so swapping those back and forth. And what this does is allow us to separate the effects of year and the unit from what we're actually doing, which is decreasing the permits. And so what we're asking is, does reducing permits reduce the number of nuisance bears? So it's a fairly simple and straightforward question, and this is a good approach to getting us an answer. So if you look at it graphically, it's written a little differently here than it is in your packets. But the La Salles, or I'll start with the San Juans, that first year, they're exactly the same as they were last year, but then the La Salles are reduced by 60%. Then 13, we swap that around. So the La Salles are what they are, what they were last year, and the San Juans are reduced. And then the last year of this cycle, we have that swap within the early and late seasons, where you can see this has got the peak permits, and then it's reduced, and that's reduced, and then raises again. So the idea here, by playing around with these permit numbers during the cycle, we can see if we have an actual cause and effect relationship to reduce permits if it reduces nuisance activity down there. So we'll evaluate those results in 2014, and then we'll incorporate them into the next recommendation cycle. So to wrap up here, more or less, The dates summary throughout the state are spring hunts, April 7th, May 29th, and then extended as to June 3rd. Their fall limited entry hunts, August 25th to September 30th throughout most of the state. However, you'll see that San Juan and LaSalle's have been truncated a bit and moved a little bit earlier. And then our fall spot and stalk hunts, October 6th to the 29th on those three units. And then summer pursuit, the standard one, January 7th to August 12th. And again, those experiments that we're doing down there in LaSalle and San Juan, or I guess investigation. With that, that's all I have to present in terms of summary, but I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Questions or clarification from RAC members for John? Go ahead.
Could you just expand a little bit about the nuisance problems? What do you think 5 days will do for that? Maybe how many bears are killed, depredation, ADC, and a little more information on the nuisance.
Okay. So the plan has a few categories. So on... For a unit to be in a liberal category, I didn't go into that much detail. We might put it into a liberal category if the Wildlife Service's take is more than harvest, for instance. So that's going to vary by unit throughout the state. Then in terms of other nuisance kind of activities, I think a lot of it was focused on, is that what you're getting at? I'm sorry, please re-ask the question.
How many bears have taken ADC
depredation? Oh, you got this. I'd have to pull the summary table. Yeah, that Dennis? We've got, I can tell you, right off, depredation and other mortality, say in 2010, 33 males, 18 females. It's the average over the last few years. It's usually around 30 males or so, 18 females. And that's a combined mortalities. I don't have it split out by Wildlife Services or anything.
Okay, so if my math is correct, that's 50-some killed by for depredation, and the western harvest is about 160-something?
Yes, sir. Exactly. Good.
Okay, thank you.
Chris?
The question I had around the same nuisance situation that you've got, do you know what the population trends have been on those units in the same years that you outlined where you saw the increase in nuisance problems? So I guess what I'm asking is, do you, a bear population's grown over that same time.
Okay.
It could be a cause for the increased nuisance problems.
Okay, all right. It's kind of... It's sort of a difficult question to answer because we're not really focusing. The way the plan sets us up, it doesn't have us focus on populations. Mm-hmm. It really has us focus on these proportions of males, females. And so, yes, generally the feeling on the ground is we're getting more nuisance and it's related to having more bears around. That will happen. But by following the plan, if we have areas with more nuisance or more Wildlife Services take, then what we'll do is we'll have a more liberal harvest strategy, we'll add more permits, and it'll end up with more females. And then the action should be to reduce that population in that area. But I can't say, you know, what the numbers actually are of the bears. Does that get at it?
Well, that makes sense. I had another question. Do you know what the success rates or what the anticipated success rates will be on the spot and stalk hunts, and also what the female harvest is anticipated on those hunts?
Yeah, that's been something. Okay, and this is something that's a very good question and leads to some good points. The first one is that part of it is we don't know. This is experimental. This is what the plan said. Okay, try these three out, see how it works. So we went into this educated. For instance, we look at Colorado, and there's about, on this a similar type of hunt, I think they're 12% or so. We know on the Bookcliffs, which has been a spot and stalk, 2 years ago, out of the 7 permits, 3 were brought in. So that puts you at, you know, 40% something. But then last year, nothing, so 0. So we're expecting somewhere 5-10%, but we won't know again until we actually get our spot and stocks done. So there, guys were pretty, you know, they kept that at 30, thinking it's pretty conservative in terms of the number of bears we expect to harvest out of it.
Okay, sorry. So one more question. On the harvest objectives, I know there's been some heartburn over some of the harvest objective units. And I know there's built into the plan. Do you take into account a possible over-harvest on harvest objectives? Meaning, if this year I may go over by 3 or 4 bears, I don't adjust next year down by 3 or 4 bears. So do I build into this year's harvest objective number that I may go over by a few bears?
Yes. What was built into the plan is a safety switch or valve kind of a consideration on it. That is, we're most concerned with that sort of over harvest in areas where there might be a lot of public access and a lot of public use. So the plan says if you have an area that's dominated by public land, you cannot have a harvest objective unit there. So it fits well within the 9 mile, for instance, is the one that's usually brought up. But even we ran the numbers on the Wasatch, and in terms of habitat, I think I could somewhere around 40% of it was still in private, and then plus there are tribal lands on there as well. So what we do is we use those harvest objectives, but we focus them on areas where we think the hunting pressure and rate of take will not be so fast that it goes faster than our report of the bears that are taken. That's the best answer I have right now, because again, this is one of these things that the plan says try the three out, see what works, and then we'll obviously make some adjustments here at the end of the cycle.
But you don't adjust down by, say, 5% just in case of
over-harvest,
target harvest?
Yeah, not automatically, we try to build it up, those kind of safety valves up front. And some of the things, this is a great process. I enjoy this process. Some of the things that we've spoken about in some of the different racks so far are ways to reduce that reporting time. You know, try to figure out ways. Are there better electronic communication things? Are there ways we can get tighter with reporting? So I think we've got that in the back of our minds, and we're trying to improve this process considerably. And again, but it's mostly at the front end. We don't have that, put in the documents yet, specifically what you said.
So more specifically, with these new harvest objective units that you're proposing, what have you built in for over harvest on these particular units?
On these, again, the idea was to get units that we thought were safer for harvest objectives to begin with. And that's as far as we've taken it.
Tim.
I got lost in your map a little bit.
Sorry, me too.
When I was looking at it, you ended up with 494 permits for the thing, which you said that's 11%, but by my calculations, it's at least 15% increase. And yet when you showed the criteria in there, I didn't see anything that said there was a reason to be increasing the number of permits for the year. It didn't trigger anything.
Okay. So what they did is they went to each of the units and looked at the last 3 years and looked at compared to what harvest strategy that we want that unit to be in. So, and then that unit, for instance, some of them that were being harvested light and were into a moderate, I think even La Salle's and San Juan's even, were traditionally in those categories, the biologists would then bump up the permits by somewhere between 0% and 20%. And they would do that within each unit based on the conditions, and then you're getting into the biology of that particular unit. So what the plan says is, here's what your strategy is, look at those proportions, and then bump up or bump down the permits by the amount dictated by the plan. So that's what was done. I don't have, you know, the stepwise for each of the units in front of me, but that's what was done for each of the units. And the overall ended up bumping them up statewide by that amount. But that doesn't, but just for limit entry.
I should trust you that this number 494, that's okay. We can go there.
I'd hope you'd... I'm a spokesman for the biology and for the plan. What we're doing is following the plan that was approved by the board in January and using those proportions in order to calculate the permits. But, I mean, so it's we're following the plan. I personally would hope you'd trust me because I care about the resource. But, that's how it was put together.
So there must be something in there that lets me see that... we are actually following the plan, because it looked to me like we are. It looks like we've increased numbers significantly. And I don't know why.
Oh, okay, here, this might help, because statewide, one of the things is when we did the overall, the state is supposed to be, according to the plan, overall in the moderate category. So we saw the males, in the when we looked at it statewide over the last 3 years, males in moderate, females in light. So that tells us that we're going to end up bumping up permits by a little bit in order to bring the proportions in statewide, both females and males, into moderate. So if there's anything that would show that on a statewide wrap-up, and again, it's kind of difficult because, you know, the numbers within each unit aren't, you know, kind of add together. But that's probably my best answer to that question. Is just when you do the statewide wrap-up, you see we're going to end up increasing permits.
Let me ask that question in another different way, his same question, but in a different way. I think I've been on the rack for 6 years now, so I think I've either heard five or six presentations on the BEAR plan, and in those 5 or 6 years, the number of BEAR permits each year has always gone up. Whether it's gone up 11% or 15%, it's always gone up. And so over those 5 or 6 years, I think you have to make an assumption if the permits are going up every year, it must be that the bear population is going up every year in the same sort of percentages, and you can look at the percentage of females and males taken and say, yes, that's right, because our percentages are staying right where we want. So the assumption is that over the last 5 or 6 years, bear population has increased exponentially, and I don't know what that would be, except I know it's a lot. And my question for you as a biologist is, what is it about the state of Utah that is allowing our bear population to grow in such numbers? It doesn't do something different. Some years it might go down, some years it might go up, some years it might stay the same. It seems that as biologists, you're telling us that this is what the bears are doing every year, going like this. And I guess my question is, not that I don't believe your numbers, but I'd like some explanation if that is true. Why do we have a bear population that's doing that every year?
Mm-hmm. Well, the indication, again, if we, you know, falling back on the biology and the number and the way the plan was put together, and again, it was based on the science in Idaho, if we're harvesting in light to moderate over the last few years, that means that the population is going to be on a upward trajectory. That's what that indicates. So definitely the from the guys in the regions, there's definitely the feeling, again, that we've got a good, healthy, growing bear population. We're seeing nuisance go up. We're seeing a lot of things that are indicators of bear population. And we have a question about that earlier. That's what the indicators are. The bear populations are going up and they're healthy. And then when we look at our harvest data, it shows we're managing light to moderate. So we'd expect it. There really shouldn't be anything surprising in those numbers based on the way we've historically been managing the bears. Even though it's increased permits, and it sounds like a lot of permits, relative to the impacts on the population, we're not taking enough females to lower.
Questions from other RAC members? Richard.
Why don't they implement spot and stock hunts in all the units. What's the criteria that?
That one, I don't have a good answer for that, not being involved in developing the plan. So all I can say is that the idea was to try to add the spot and stalks in order to increase opportunity, but I need to have some of the other people that are historically involved in that process to answer that better.
Can I ask, is there any reason why it couldn't be implemented that you are aware of?
Let me just speak to that just for a second, Richard. We, as an agency, we don't want to sell the public a camel permit, something that they can't take. And in a lot of the units, the bear populations are low enough that, I mean, how often do you go out and just see a bear and then, okay, I can go stalk it now? The population has to be high enough that you actually see a bear once in a while when you're out there in order to make it a permit that would be valuable to the general hunter, and we're not just selling them something that they can't use. And so some of the units that we looked at had bear populations high enough that you could go out there, take a trip on your horse and see bear to where you could make a spot and stock. If you were to do it on some of the other units, you may never see one.
So is it possible that there are other units that could be added to that spot and stock?
There probably are. I don't think so in our region, but there could be. I spend a lot of time out in the hills, and I only get to see one every 5 years. I'd hate to be buying a license every year for that.
I'll take you with me.
Other questions from RAC members?
Thanks.
Yes, George.
Help me understand. You really don't count the bears and find a number. You do this by the percentage of success for the permits is how you establish a sort of a number.
Yes, sir, exactly. And this is something that's kind of interesting, maybe not as widely known about modern wildlife biology a lot. It's very difficult to get a precise estimate, a reliable estimate about the number of animals out there, especially things like bears. Really hard to count and get the actual number. But what we can do is we've got proxies that are related to those numbers, and that is the percentages of females and males that are taken. So, and those are, we can measure really precisely and really well. So it's one of those cost-benefit types of things where we can get all the information we need to manage the population based on those percentages of adult males and females, and ironically, without even knowing exactly how many bears are out there. We need to know what the most important thing is the trends. Is it trending? Are we harvesting light to moderate where it looks like the trend's going up? Or are we harvesting liberally and is the trend going down? That's kind of what we manage for, not a golden number that's really hard to estimate.
So you managed to have the population go level then?
The plan has the whole state overall in moderate. There might be some units where we have nuisance or other concerns where we might want liberal and bring them down and then offset that with light units in order to keep the overall state stable.
Okay. Will a bear travel from one unit to the other and or do they are they moved by DWR? Or if you have too many in one area, will they go to another area?
Oh, and that's one of the things about the plan that is also interesting about the way it was set up. That's sort of a goal of the plan, to have source sink areas is the way they talk about it. So you can have areas where there's an overabundance, where you have bears that can feed into other areas where there's fewer bears. So that's part of the plan, to have that kind of a dynamic be able to be set up where these things can move between units, and we can hit one unit hard and one hit less, and even if we get rid of, for some reason, all the bears are gone from this unit, there'll still be a source to, you know, keep the population protected.
Okay. Do they travel by themselves, or is part of the plan to artificially trap them and move them? Yeah.
No, there's no plan to no move them around. Mm-mm, no, this is based on it's a harvest and permit and opportunity based plan. The idea is to again to have the permits and have the harvests. Do it that way. There's nothing in the plan to move them around.
How long is this? How long ago did Idaho do this? Come up with this?
It was 20 years worth of study, 80s.
And we're kind of using their study and putting it into the bear plan here in Utah.
Mm-hmm. More or less. Now, I'm at the edge again. I wasn't involved in. I don't know if this is good or bad. I wasn't involved in creating the plan, but I am responsible to implement the plan. So, and again, it's one of these things that's gone through this process, it's gone through the board, and now I got to take that thing and I got to follow the numbers and do it as they say. And that's about as much background as I give you, but I wasn't party to, you know, the deliberations within. I hope that's good enough.
This plan, it was started January of 2011. Is that when the Wildlife Board adopted?
January 4th, 2011 was adopted.
Richard. Is there any component in the plan that figures in anything that is in regards to the predation on big game animals by bears?
The short answer is no. The bears are different than some of the other predators, and their impact on, say, deer populations is thought to be minimal at most. Different story with cougar, different with coyotes. So I can give you some numbers on that. For instance, in the one study done on the LaSalles, out of the 25 fawns that were found, that were predated upon, one of them was due to bear. In New Mexico, 4%, I think, of the ones that are killed. Colorado, I think it was 3%. So what, again, I wasn't party to putting the plan together, but that's not something, game populations isn't something that the bear plan addresses, just the bear harvest.
Okay. They just take their slice of the pie, though, right? Just like we do.
Matt.
In your proposal or in your presentation, it showed the more permits you have, the more nuisance bears you have. Is that correct?
Pursuit. In the LaSalle and San Juan.
So is it just in the LaSalle and San Juan that's...
Yes, that's right. That's the only place that... That's where the biologists down there in that region, the south, saw that trend. Other places, I mean, we should note that the pursuit is a good tool. In a lot of the other regions, they like it. It's very helpful to be able to have, you know, if there's campground issues or whatever, you can pursue them, you can chase those bears around. So it's one of those double-edged swords where you can use it to move bears around, but their concern in that particular region is that the pursuit might be pushing them over the edge, that they're chased around enough that they're being pushed down into town. There's other factors. There's weather issues. There's other campers and other people up there. There's a lot of other potential issues. And that's, again, why we didn't just say, okay, LaSalle, San Juan, you know, we're going to look into it. There's a trend. There's a solid trend, and we're going to look into it, and that's why.
Other questions?
Fred, I do.
Sarah.
Okay, I have two questions to start out with. The first one, and I might read from my little notes just so please, I don't get something wrong here. I know you didn't write the plan, but those who did, do you know if they actually took into account the human conflict and the success rates on each unit into account when they created that strategy? Did they look at take numbers as well as human bear conflicts?
The short answer is yes. Again, if we have a unit where we have historical or with conflicts, then what we'll say is, okay, we've got, you know, liberal, I forget which unit's liberal here.
Wasatch.
So, okay, so that means, and then we can extend the spring season as well. So to extend the spring season, we'll put it in liberal, which means a higher proportion of female take, which should do this with that population in that area. So, yeah, intrinsic, one of the big drivers for doing a for adding these permits is nuisance. That's built into it. Again, it's a balancing act, and it is definitely built into it.
Okay. And the second question is, does the management plan that you will be implementing, does it have the capability to allow changes year by year based on new human-bear conflict and the take ratios that mm-hmm. we see from the previous year?
Right now, it's written as this three-year cycle. Of course, there are, if there's, you know, an emergency type of situation, I think there would be mechanisms to do that. But just at face value, you know, we're doing a three-year cycle of making recommendations, and we'll evaluate, for instance, the harvest objectives. We'll evaluate how some of these things, different things worked, and then adjust it after the three-year cycle. That's a good point, because with nuisance, it might be a little bit different. I don't know. I think it's definitely with the percentages of males, females, and the percentages of take in the harvest, it's really helpful to have 3 years of data. You know, better the better data you have, the better recommendations you can make. So this three-year, I think from reading this, is a good approach because it allows us to get enough information. Because remember, you might have a wet, late snow year that can drive any 1 year. You might have, you know, good forage, bad forage that could be driving any 1 year. But by having this three-year block and looking at the data for that three-year block, it really helps the biologists come up with some recommendations that they can feel pretty good about.
Okay, so for instance, up on the NEBO unit, which is here on the Uinta piece mm-hmm. of the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest, up in, it looks like we have our Central Mountains NEBO, which mm-hmm. is a big concern of ours because we have a lot of human-bear conflict because we have so many people and a large population of bear. And then we also have the Wasatch Front, or the Wasatch Mountains West, that's liberal, yet NEBO is moderate, quite a few, almost by half, less permits in the spring, about half again there in the fall, yet we see more human bear conflicts in that NEBO unit that we're concerned about in the last 2 years. So the first year that we saw a lot of conflict was in a different management plan. Last year was in this new round. Mm-hmm. So to wait 2 more years to have more conflict up there and change is a concern of ours. It's also a hard area to get into in the spring, and even in late spring. We didn't open gates until into June, and the hunt ends June 3rd.
Right.
So.
Yeah, well, one of the things that, again, the reason for the extended on the NEBO is because of nuisance. In terms of permits and things, Craig, you might want to address.
We just can't.
Too, because
folks can't get into that unit until sometimes yeah. into after the extended unit. So
there's a variety of issues, and some of the problems that we've had, and please, I'd like you to add stuff. But again, is the statewide balance in terms of the number of liberal, the number of moderate, the number of light. So in some ways, and we had some discussions about this, and trying to make this balance statewide, that we have to follow the plan and trying to set which units are which. So that may not be the best answer, but in our deliberations, we ended up with this mix that way. And but that stuff was thought about. So.
Yeah, and Sarah, we can only have so many liberal units within the state. And basically, going by the plan, we tried to put one in each of the regions. The Wasatch, we have received more complaints on the Wasatch than we did the NEBO. Although we did fight, and that was the fight that John was talking about that we had. Good discussion on trying to have a few more permits there to reduce those conflicts on there. We're trying a few different ways to try to reduce those conflicts.
Do we have capability under this new management plan to shift some of the spring late, even some of the spring over into the fall, where they can access those units a little? I mean, that particular, the NEBO unit, a little easier. Do you have capability to shift
some of those?
We
have those capabilities to do that, yeah. This is the way it was set up is our recommendation based on what Dennis, as the biologist over that area, came up with.
Okay, we might want to recommend.
But and we've also, you know, as you know, worked with the Forest Service mm-hmm. to try to get gates opened earlier or put in other gates that they can open a little further up the mountain, or lock those further up the mountain and let the hunters in partway. So.
Other questions? Larry.
The overall goal of the division, is it to maintain the bear population, decrease the population, or increase the population?
The overall goal of the plan that I'm following is to, again, balance nuisance with protecting the resource, but at the same time allowing opportunity. And the way it's written in the plan, it would keep the statewide at a moderate, which would put it more or less level, but then allow for an individual adjustment within units. Some units we want to bring it down. Some units we want to allow it to go up.
So with your plan, it would stabilize the state?
On a statewide scale, but any one unit might be going up or down.
Okay. Thank you for those questions, RAC members. Those are all good. Let's go ahead and turn to the audience. This is not time for comments, but just questions for the division or points of clarification. If you want to come up to the microphone.
Well, I love those questions.
You are indeed, young man.
John Bear, I need to make sure I'm clear with you on the Wasatch, because I think there's going to be some concern. The Wasatch is in the liberal strategy, is that right?
Yes, sir. The west, what the Wasatch Mountain West, which, or the Wasatch Current Creek, the harvest objective.
Okay, one. So the Wasatch West is in the liberal. There will still be baiting and hounding allowed in that one.
Yes.
The Aviniquin.
Right.
Will be the spot and stock.
That's going to have the spot and stock. Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I had.
But it will have with hounds though. With hounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Come on up.
I got two questions for you.
Tell us who you are.
They're Chet Young with the Utah Houndsman Association. Number one is we're trying to follow the plan, staying in the moderate, the liberal, and the light. San Juan and LaSalle are in the moderate. The 47 tags, normal tags that are issued, puts it at the moderate. Then we've added 30 permits for spot and stock. How does that follow the moderate category? And number two, when we're comparing our biology on spot and stock hunts, can we use the biology of the roadless part of the book cliffs and compare that to San Juan and LaSalle with all the access?
Okay. First off, the way, again, we're starting it initially, and I want to double check this. The LaSalle and San Juan, if I've got it, when we do the calculations, they've been actually being lightly harvested. So you're going to see a bump up because we want to have them in moderate. So you're going to see a bump up in permits. And that's the reason for that, to move it more into that category. Okay? So that's why that'll happen. And then the second part of your question was, can we use the biology in the one unit to identify what the harvest objective is going to be taken in another unit? Not as a definitely it's going to happen this way. We got 40% in book cliffs, we're going to get 40% in LaSalle. No, but we can use that based on, and then information in Colorado and information on multiple years to make an educated guess and come up with that 30 permits. So we don't know exact, but again, that's the plan says try it, see how it works, and then adjust. And that's what we're going to do.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Other questions or clarification?
My name is Jason Binder. On the one slide you showed with the bear hair study, it showed a 9% decrease in population density on LaSalle's, but yet we are still raising that 30 tags. Shouldn't we be cutting tags off that unit if the population density is going down?
So what will happen is, again, I talked about the precision, and we've got these thresholds where we start to worry about it. So if it was going down by more than 10%, then you'd be exactly right, and that's what we would do. So, but since it didn't make that 10% threshold, we keep it as it is for now, and then we'll go through this next round, and if it hits that threshold and keeps going down, then we'll make those adjustments, not only there, but throughout the region. So you'll see that. Again, there's slop in the system. Unfortunately, we're not as superhuman as we'd like to be. We don't have exact estimates on everything out there, and we have to keep some wiggle room there, and we do that by having those cutoffs and those thresholds.
Oh, okay, another question is, I know we used Idaho as a representative of where we wanted our state to be, but why wasn't the advice of Hal Black and Jordan Pedersen, that have done a lot of studies in this state on actual bear mortality and bear survival, used in this plan?
I wasn't involved. I know the division has a very close relationship with Hal, and we've worked with him a lot. And some of the bears, for instance, the collared bears that we're using for the denning studies, are his bears. So there is that close relationship. There is that interaction. I can't tell you the specifics of what was discussed as the plan was put together, but I'm fairly confident that these guys are respected and were listened to.
Okay, and on in the triggers, wasn't it supposed to be when you moved from one harvest strategy to another? Wasn't it supposed to be up to a 20% increase in tags? We're on La Salle's and San Juan putting that up to 30. From 47 is way more than 20% increase.
The 30, again, is based on, for one, the limited entry, second half of the limited entry was reduced by 5. And then the 30 is our best thought in terms of we're using that estimate of expected take. So we're expecting maybe 10%. So out of those 30, we're expecting maybe 3 bears to be harvested. And you're right. I don't know what's going to happen. We have to try it through, but it follows within the dictates of what we're supposed to be doing.
Okay, and as we all know, as we've seen the management of animals in the state, isn't the bear population such a fine animal to manage that maybe our criterias of this way and that way sway a little bit more than they should?
Based on my knowledge of the biology and the science and what was put into this, I think the plan's got some good safety valves, and I think it's got some good science backing it up. And I think if we go through this cycle and we see these percentages changing, we see a lot of females in there, then it automatically, you know, it puts the brakes on. I think the bear populations, they're robust. They're doing fine right now. And I think there's enough safety valves in there to keep anything from going terribly wrong.
So within 3 years, the way we're sitting now, you feel we couldn't damage the bear population?
If we start impacting the bear population, we could impact it. But if we do, then the plan will say, okay, you're right, your proportions are wrong. You need to reduce permits.
But we got to wait 3 years to do that.
We will, again, the data are going to be better after 3 years than after 1 year.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions or clarification? Then I'll go ahead and close the question period, and we'll open it up for comments now. Remember, if you're representing an organization, please limit your comments to 5 minutes. If you're representing yourself, try and be concise and limit yourself to 3 minutes. Try and fill out one of these yellow cards for me before you come up to the microphone, if you would, please. And our first comment is from Ben Lauder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think, Ben, you've passed out, at least to the RAC members, something for them to look at.
Yes, I have.
If you guys want to refer to the... Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and I also sent that out in email form last week as well. So I had a few bounces. I hope the majority of you got that and have had a chance to look over it. Again, my name is Ben Lauder. I'm here tonight representing the Utah Bowman's Association. The Utah Bowman's Association supports the DWR's efforts to provide an increased opportunity to hunt bears via the harvest objective hunts and the spot and stalk hunts. Overall, we like the plan that's been adopted earlier this year, and some of these increased opportunities that it's going to provide. However, we feel that there's a part of the recommendation is inadvertently eliminating an opportunity that currently exists to hunt over bait on the Wasatch Mountain current creek of Inniquin unit. So therefore, we're recommending what I've handed out to you here tonight. We're recommending a limited entry spring archery only hunt in conjunction with that harvest objective hunt. And if you look at the handout that I handed, there's two hunts listed here. The hunt number one is what's being recommended by the DWR, although I've changed one thing on that for our recommendation, and that is the harvest objective. I've lowered that from 10 down to 7 bears, and that is to account for an opportunity to target 3 bears on the spring limited entry archery only hunt. Based on the 2010 annual black bear report, the 10-year average is success rate is 40%, and so to target 3 bears, we could issue about 7 tags for that. Now, this hunt number 2 here, the spring limited entry archery only hunt, would be essentially the same type of archery bear tag that we currently issue when somebody puts in for a bear tag and chooses an archery tag. It would, you know, allow spot and stalk hunting, of course, allow baiting, which is the significant piece here, allow hunting with hounds if that hunter so chooses to, but only allows hunting with archery tackle. Now, I want to state real quick, this isn't necessarily a bow hunter issue. This is a baiting issue as far as this opportunity is concerned. The only thing that really makes it a bow hunter issue here is the fact that the only way you can hunt over bait in Utah is with a bow, with an archery permit. Now, you're probably asking yourself, why are we not asking just to be to allow baiting on the harvest objective hunt? And the reason for that is we understand that if we do that, the Forest Service would probably get overwhelmed with baiting requests. And so we were trying to take a step forward and help the Forest Service out a little bit here and eliminate that burden on them. So by creating a spring limited entry archery only hunt that allows baiting, we would limit the number of baiting requests that the Forest Service would get to just those hunters that would be drawing that unit, or drawing that hunt. Now we see this as a win all the way around. Reasons why: one, the harvest objective opportunity obviously allows for an unlimited hunting opportunity, which we think is great. Two, we believe that with that harvest objective hunting opportunity on that unit at the same time as this limited entry opportunity, the odds would probably be easier to draw that limited entry tag since there's that over the counter tag option on that unit as well. The split of the tags the number of bears targeted between these two hunts. I've reduced the harvest objective to 7 on the harvest objective hunt, and then targeting 3, issuing 7 tags on the limited entry hunt. I looked at the 2010 annual black bear report. About 26% of bears taken are taken over bait with a bow. So that's where I came up with that split. Basically, 25-30%. Of the tags I'm recommending be, or of the target anyway, of the bears harvest that I'm recommending to be part of this limited entry hunt. Let's see. Also, we understand that there's concerns about conflicts between houndsmen and people hunting over bait. I'd like to address that real quick. I don't see that as a huge issue, and the reason why is the rest of the units in the state currently do that. We allow hound hunting and we allow baiting at the same time. And so I really don't see how that's an issue. Also, in the fall, we have archery deer hunters, archery elk hunters, hunters hunting bears over bait, hunting hunters hunting bears over hounds, all at the same time. So a handful of houndsmen and a handful of hunters hunting over bait, I don't see a great risk of you know, terrible impacts of conflicts there. Also, you know, whether there's legal baits allowed on the unit or not. There's always the potential there for illegal baits to be put out there. You know, unfortunately, it does happen. You know, there's bad apples in every group. Fortunately, or hopefully, it's few and far between. But if we allow legal baits on this unit, it helps kind of create a self-policing unit. And the reason I say that is any hunter there that has a legal bait, you know, it's in their own self-interest to look out for and help police that illegal bait baiting that may be going on, potentially be going on. This I see as important, and I've listed this here in the on the bottom of my recommendation here. The reason I see this as being important, just 2 weeks ago at the working at the Wildlife Board working meeting, Jim Karpos, the director of the DWR, stated that with the current budget cuts that the division's going through and is going to continue to go through, there's budgeting issues, and we're cutting back in, full-time employees at the division. His statement was essentially, when you need a CO out there in the field, you're not going to be able to find one. So, in my opinion, a self-policing unit is to the benefit of all. That pretty much wraps up my recommendation there that I've handed out to you. In addition to that, I would just like to say I've looked at the hunt dates on the La Salle and the San Juan, the fall hunt dates, where the division is recommending a shortened season on that fall hunt. I would like to show support to keep those dates the same as the rest of the fall dates. Again, you know, there's 5 permits on each unit. Seems like a really small chance of conflict there. You know, I've been with friends hunting on that San Juan unit in the fall. Didn't really see any issues. And again, it's you know, these hunts are already overlapping the archery hunts. I don't understand why the limit entry, you know, the rifle elk and the muzzleloader elk hunts are any more important than the archery hunts. And again, it's a very very limited number of hunters that are going to be out there at that point. Anyway, so again, I would recommend on the San Juan and the La Salle, mirroring those fall season dates to mirror the rest of the fall season days throughout the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ben. If it's okay with the RAC members, I'll ask John if he'll if you'd like to respond to that in terms of the Bowman's recommendation. In other words, how does the division feel about it?
One of these things where I don't like to get into too much. It's where we made our recommendations based on what we saw in the field. For instance, La Salle, San Juan, and those are unique units in terms of conflict between hounds and some of the other people out there hunting, bow hunters. I asked for numbers about that today, and they'd get 20 or so per year complaints through emails and phone calls and that kind of thing, whereas in other units, one or two is acceptable. So it's understandable that people are going to get out there and get upset by something happening now and again. La Salle's and San Juan's are just, they're unique, and there's a lot of pressure down there, and there's a lot of emotion down there. So that's why those recommendations were made. That's... You know, in terms of, I don't like to respond or argue with the public. I want them to feel the, you know, give their impressions.
And how would the division feel about an archery-only elk hunt, archery-only bear hunt in the Wasatch?
With bait? Was that the details of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, you know, if things fall within the purview of the plan, and I can't see why they don't. I guess I have to leave that up to the board.
Right now, the bear plan has no provisions for having separate archery only elk hunts, bear hunts? Gee, Liz.
Yeah, one of the things, okay, all right, here's the other half of it, though I do need to address. And when we walk back into the office, every time I walk back into the office, there's a sign on, there's a placard that says simplify. And one of the difficulties in presenting recommendations like this is that we have to try to make a one-size-fits-all, a best optimization of our recommendations. One of the difficulties is when, I mean, every unit's different, but when we have seasons, within units, within regions, this has been one of my tougher jobs, starting this only a few months ago, to sort out what these recommendations are, you know, just reading the proclamation and through the book. And it can lead to people making mistakes, and not even on their own part, is because the proclamations get so insanely complicated. So anything that's going to continue to split seasons, and one day it's okay for archery, one day bait's okay, one day it's not, leads to law enforcement type issues and complicated issues. So my general response, if it looks like it's going to be splitting up seasons and places in a way that's going to make things more and more complicated, then we'd rather not see that. But again, this is the process. So.
Okay.
Fred, I got one question. Sorry. John, just to clarify, I think Ben had mentioned that this is one of the only units, if not the only unit, that does not have this.
Okay,
the Wasatch Avantaquin unit.
Yes, okay.
Is that true, and do we know why?
And this does not have
the archery only with baiting.
Well, we've got the, because we had to institute that spring harvest objective somewhere, and that's where it, you know, that's where it fell out through all our discussions. And to try to balance those together, you know, this is what we came up with. The short answer is what we came up with in that area.
Okay, thank you. Chet Young.
Chet Young with the Utah Houndsman Association. I've got four things to address on the bear management plan, the revisions for this year. I sat through the bear management plan and was part of the process of making it, and I'd like to thank the division for giving us that opportunity. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about some conservation and some preservation to this plan. I handed you all out a paper, and number one is the San Juan and La Salle hunt, fall bear hunt, are to the bear hunters what the Henrys are to the deer hunters. They both take up to 12 points to draw. We would like to see the season dates the same as the rest of the state. If this isn't possible, we would compromise at August 18th to September 20th. We're asking to preserve our very best bear hunt. That is the premium units in this state. If you look at the dates, the division rolled it back 1 week, so it would go from the 20th of August to September 7th versus going the 25th to the 30th. It don't seem like it changes it that much, but if you sit down and look at a calendar, it went from 6 weekends to 2 weekends. It took our most premium hunt and, you know, pushed it to 2 weekends. Number two, we support the spot and stock hunt if it's done with reasonable tag numbers. We would recommend starting out with 10 tags instead of 30, 15 the following year. If your harvest data is in there, that gives you room to move up, 20 for the third year. And we would like to ask that the female harvest and average age of the bears being killed be took into consideration when increasing tags on this or allotting these spot and stock tags? Most of the studies show that with spot and stock, your female harvest is a lot higher and your average age is a lot lower. I'm going to skip number three because I think everything else is more important. The Wasatch Mountain, Kern Creek, Venequin spring harvest objective. We'd like to see that changed to a female subquota. We don't know how it's going to work. It doesn't really change anything. You can still sell over-the-counter tags as many as you want, but it helps protect the bear population. The female quota, I think the division has set at 40%. You kill four females, the hunt shuts down, and we preserve something to hunt next year, the year after, the year after. So we would like to see that move to a quota unit. When I sat through the bear management plan with Kevin and everybody, like I said, I was grateful to be a part of that. We were reassured multiple times that this harvest objective wouldn't come out and be like a lion harvest objective. You know, there's a lot of people involved from the time we make the plan until this comes about. So we're asking for that safety net of the female subquota. And thank you for your time.
Thanks very much. RAC members, if it's okay, we'll have John respond to those, basically those two recommendations. John, how does the division feel about basically date changes on the San Juan and LaSalle?
Okay, yeah, the first one, the date changes on the LaSalle and San Juan, again, this wasn't done with, you know, without substantial deliberation. It does make things more complicated, which is what we don't want to do. I hinted at the numbers from before that indicated, again, those, like Chad said, those are unique units. There's a lot of passions on them, and there's a lot more conflict there, and we're trying to balance it. And gosh, when we look at LaSalle and San Juan in units, and we're really interested in opportunity, but if we look at just the seasons for the hounds, you know, the first one starts the spring, and there are hounds on the forest from April 7th through May 30th. June is the only month that there aren't any. They start again in July for your summer pursuit, the 7th through the 20th, the second half of the pursuit, the 30th, all the way through August 12th, then start again, even with our adjusted dates, on the 20th of August, go on into September 7th. And I acknowledge this is a prime, Jeff's right, this is a prime unit, but we put that stop on the 7th in order to allow 1 week for the archery deer and elk hunters to be out there to actually get the rut without having the dogs out there as well. And then the dogs start again after that. So, you know, I appreciate the input and the frustration there, but this is one of those things where there's a lot of opportunity and we're really trying to balance it. And there's still overlap between the hunters and the dogs. And I would love, I mean, I love how Ben has said it in the past too, where, you know, it'd be great if everybody, they should get along, they should share the mountain. But the fact is, we still need a little bit of free time for everybody, and we're trying to do that. So that's why we made the recommendations the way we did.
Okay. Let's go ahead and... Jason, do you want to come up? Thank you.
My name is Jason Binder. In the past, I've stood here and represented the Houndsman Association, and tonight I'm going to be representing myself. As we all know, the hounding and houndsmen are a very valuable tool
to the state and managing bear populations and letting the division know where the bear population is at. And this is something that we really, really need to preserve, whether it's spring, summer, fall. We see that during the summer when we're out there running the bears, there's no bears in campgrounds. I don't know how the bears manage to run clear to LaSalle and go into town of LaSalle when they're being chased, but I guess it happens. For the past 7 years, I've worked with the DWR and endured the RAC processes with great outcomes and even more downfalls. There's a few things I'd really like you to think about tonight. How many of you truly understand bear biology and what it takes to keep a stable and healthy bear population? These tag numbers and harvest strategies are going to be very devastating to our bear population. I personally sat in on the planning board for the new management plan, and tag increases on prime hunting areas was highly addressed by the management plan board, and Kevin Bunnell reassured us that this would not happen on our premium units. And what are we seeing? 30 tag increases when it was promised it wouldn't happen 1 year later. In the last 20 years in this state, nothing against John, but we've had 10 different mammal coordinators, and it would be a lot better if and more stable for this state if we could keep somebody in tune with the bear and lion issues we are having. Bears are a very delicate animal to manage. Sorry about my writing. I can't even read my own writing. Bears are very delicate animal to manage. Over-harvesting females and sub-adults will have a drastic and devastating effect on our state's valuable resource. We have already sat around and watched the devastation of our lion population under harvest objective hunt strategies. Our bear population will never recover if hunted this way and without strict and closely monitored female and adult harvest and setting strict female sub-adult quotas, no more than 20% to 30% on any given unit. The way harvest objective is managed in this state can be viewed more as legalized poaching, because time and time again animals are over-harvested on harvest objective units and is just brushed off and never addressed, or tag numbers are never lowered. This has been seen year after year with lion harvest. Female subquotas should also be put on the spot and stock units with 20% to 30%, because you're not going to know what you're shooting through a rifle scope for 300 yards. Mother Nature plays a very valuable role on whether bears survive and young are born and make it past 2 years old. Everyone in this room should be asked themselves, why was Hal Black and Jordan Pedersen not involved in this bear management strategy? After all, they have over 50 years of bear study here in Utah put together. Another thing I'd like to address is the shortened season dates on San Juan and LaSalle fall season. The last 2 years, I've had the opportunity to hunt with limited entry elk hunters on the Wasatch unit and the San Juan unit, and I've never seen a bear hunter or ever heard a dog come through the country. And all the times they'd ask me, why do we not see any bear hunters down here with the bears we're seeing? Because there's no opportunity to hunt in the fall. Our tags are just as important to us bear hunters, so we should have the regular season like we do in the rest of the state. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jason. Hal, do you have a card? I was hoping we'd be able to hear from you.
John, do you understand the phrase being thrown under the bus? I can't believe that Kevin is not here to help, but you're doing a good job. Just write this down somewhere, Kevin. You know, John mentioned these colored females around the state, which he knows aren't enough of a sample, but it's a start. I think the proclamation here should stipulate that it is against the rules or the law to harvest a colored female. That might help preserve that small sample. I don't know if that could be done, but anyway, that would be an issue. The other thing is, and Jason alluded to this, there was no conspiracy, I think, to keep me off the bear management plan, at least none that I know of. But this plan, I think, is the most sophisticated that the state has had, and I know John well enough to know that he's capable of implementing it and monitoring it. So I have no doubts that that will be a good thing. My only concern is, and Jason again alluded to this, if you go through the names, Elo, Pedersen, Blackwell, McLaughlin, Kevin, Bates, Wolf, these are mammal coordinators. It's averaged about a new coordinator about every 2 years. And so this may be silly on my part, but I would hope that we might expect in John someone who has an interest in a variety of wildlife. He's had some bear experience in lion work. That we trust that if he stays in his position, and he left a good position to come here, and I'm not sure why, but I think he must have some deep-seated interest in management. And I would hope that we would do as a community in all of our capacities what we can to see him supported in this new position. And hopefully we can go another 10 years without a new coordinator. Because again, 10 in around 20 years is not enough to have a sound management program. So whatever we can do to encourage him to stay and be involved would be a good thing. And personally, I would pledge him my support in that endeavor as well. So again, thank you, John, and crawl out from under the bus if you're capable.
Thank you, Hal. Chad Coburn.
Hi, my name's Chad Coburn. I'm a member of the Houndsman Association, Well, Utah Houndsman Association. I'd like to reiterate what Mr. Young said and just kind of elaborate just a skiff on our three concerns with the plan. We had members sitting on it. It's a good plan. It's a good start. Let's see what happens. Here's three revisions I think you can throw in with the simplest of things, and it really makes sense what we're asking for. That San Juan LaSalle fall tag, we're talking five permits. Those are some huge units. Guess what? I had the tag 2 years ago. No conflicts. Tony had the tag last year. No conflicts. The Bowman's Association just stood up and said they have no exception to this. I talked to Justin Shannon. He's saying that's at the bow hunters that had the problem. So my question is, why don't we just do this? Take the conservation permits and say there's no fall hunts. And let me, a resident that waited 12 years to draw that tag, or as I like to say, my wife this coming year, hunt that same hunt under those same pretenses. Every morning we left camp, run down in the acorns, we run bear. Every elk hunter went to camp. The only conflict I had, I couldn't feed them fast enough. They wanted me to tell them where the elk are. There's no conflict down there with five permits. Give a guy the same privilege that an elk hunter has. It's so minuscule and so minuscule. That region, every year it changes into, it's the rifle hunters, it's the muzzleloader hunters. Now we're running them into town. There's something going on in that region that makes me say, what is going on? It's nowhere else in the state but those two units. And it's always a different conflict. Ask yourself, what's going on down there? The 30 spot and stock tags. Once again, we agreed to that. But here's what we ask. When we started this summer training season, we were told, let's start out slow. Let's see what's going to happen. So we started out with a couple units. And then it grew. Then we had to make revisions, take July 24th out of it. We made that division because of the conflicts down there with the Forest Service and everybody else. And it worked. Summer training season has been a sweet deal. The only conflict we have now is supposed bears in town. So let's start out that program with the numbers of our organization, 10, 15, and 20. Let's progressively walk into that plan rather than going with 30 tags, which is just a minute number under the total spring tags. Let's go easy. Let's see what happens. Let's not jump into something we don't know what we're doing. John said that. We think we can only mirror what Colorado's done. We think this is what happened in the book list, but let's walk into it slow rather than getting our sow harvest too high. And then, like it says, on the Aviniquin, it's a cheap safety measure to put in a sow sub quota up there. Harvest objective has been way aggressive on lions. I'm sorry, but a sub quota is not going to change the plan of putting it in there saying, if we get too many sows, we're going to shut that hunt down. Let's do it in a timely manner, and let's do it intelligently. That's not a big revision for the houndsman. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Others who would like to respond? I don't have any more cards, then I will go ahead and close the comment period and bring it back to RAC members. And RAC, if you can indulge me, I think I'd like to try and formulate what our issues are with regard to this and see if we can work our way through them. Presenters, let me know if I am indicating what it is that you've actually requested. First of all, on the Utah Bowman's Association, RAC members, they're recommending basically on the Wasatch, Current, Creek, Anaquin Mountains that they basically go, instead of one hunt with 10 tags, they want to have two hunts with 7 and 3. One of those hunts would be a limited or harvest objective hunt, and the second one would be a limited entry archery only hunt.
Can I clarify?
So, yeah, please clarify if I misstated that.
That 7 and 3 number, those aren't tags. Those are targets of bear to be taken. So 7 would be the harvest objective on the harvest objective hunt, and then 3 bears would be the target of number of bears to be taken by that archery only hunt, which based on a 40% success rate would allow 7 to 8 tags.
Great.
Does that help?
Yep. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. So we're talking about not tags, but harvest objective quotas. So that's the Bowman's recommendation.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Again, that's harvest objective on the on hunt one, the harvest objective hunt. The other, the limited entry archery hunt, not a harvest objective hunt, a limited entry with 7 tags.
With 7 tags.
Right. So one is a harvest objective hunt with over-the-counter tags, so, which is what the DWR is recommending. And then the other one is a...
So the recommendation, the division's recommendation is for 10 tags.
Not tags.
Ten,
harvest objective.
10 quota.
Yes.
Your recommendation is for 2 hunts, harvest objective, 7 quota.
Correct.
Limited entry, archery only, 7 quota.
7 tags.
7 tags. Okay.
Which, according to 40%, would give you 3 quotas.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Okay. And then on the Utah Houndsman, I think Chad summed it up very well. They're basically asking for 3 changes from what the division is recommending. First change is basically to change the fall limited entry hunt dates. Instead of having August 20th to September 2nd, they're asking for a different opening and closing date. Those would be August 18th, 2 days earlier, to September 20th, which I believe was said that would give them 6 weekends instead of 2 by extending those. Is that correct?
Where it was, yes.
Okay.
But it would keep us off the mountain a little bit during the limited entry just to try to work with.
It's a compromise.
Second of all, with the spot and stock, the division is recommending 30-30-30 for the 3 years, and the houndsmen are recommending a tag allotment of 10 for the first year, 15 for the second year, and 20 for the third year. And finally, on the Wasatch Mountain Current Creek, they would recommend that instead of having that be a harvest objective unit, that be changed to a female quota unit. So have I pretty much got that the way the recommendations are?
Yes.
Okay. So, RAC, we can take this however way you want to. More discussion, questions, or I'm happy to entertain a motion. Matt,
are there conflicts between the Bowman and the Houndsman's proposals?
They coincide.
So you're good with what they say, you're good with what he says. There's no conflicts there.
Dwayne?
You guys said that you sat in on the deliberations for the management plan when it was formulated. Were you voted down? Were you not heard? I mean, this is obviously a plan that came out of a group of people who had a variety of vested interests, and this is what we're seeing in as a distillation of that. Now you're coming here asking as a special interest group for us to vote to modify the plan. Were you not successful there, so you want us to help you?
No, actually, the Bear Management Plan was approved and implemented requiring several modifications. That's what the division's proposal states. These are all modifications that have been changed after the management plan was...
I understand that, but did you have representation on the original plan when this was put together?
Yes, we did.
And on this plan? Yeah, I understand that, too. Was it not proposed? Did you propose this stuff at the original management plan formulation?
The Hunt strategy was not the numbers and dates. The Hunt strategy is all that plan is.
And it was not accepted at that time?
Well, they didn't put any numbers. Is that correct, Chad? Am I wrong?
Yeah, the division sets the numbers after the management plan's made. Everything
but they set them according to what their management plan guidelines were, correct? John, is that correct?
So, there still is some carryover in terms of the date. A lot of the dates are still similar. The plan would say you would do an extended season if there's a lot of nuisance, for instance. And that was carried over. That typically would be the end of the first week of June, for instance. So that's why we have the 5th date.
You know, we saw this, and we deliberated their proposals originally, and it went back, and now we're seeing it again, and we heard from vested interest groups at that time, and they were directed to go back, formulate the plan. That's happened, and now we're hearing from vested interest groups again.
Hey, John, is there anything in the plan or anything that the houndsmen are asking for actually going against the plan, or is it they're just asking for some wiggle room within the plan?
It's really no different than when you guys passed the 29 management units, and all we're concerned about is dates and permit numbers.
Yeah, but I understand that, but those dates were evaluated at pretty great length as to why they were set up and in terms of conflict. Now, you're sitting here telling us, well, there's no conflict, and I'm hearing you say that, but I also heard those who manage and manipulate this system saying, yeah, there was conflict. We got 20 complaints on the LaSalle. We only got 2 over here, and yet we're hearing no complaints. Seems like there have been complaints, if there have been 20 registered complaints down in that unit about conflict. And so those dates were adjusted, were they not, to alleviate some of that conflict?
Yes, sir, that's exactly it.
Thank you.
Okay, so I have a discussion point from the Forest River standpoint. The numbers are a concern for us in our NEBO unit, but the numbers elsewhere are not a concern of ours. Allowing more baiting in the spring to, you know, for some groups brings up, and some of these other conflicts we talked about, brings up a point that we have talked about throughout the spring and the summer, because we do indeed have a lot of bears in our campgrounds, and we do have a lot of user conflict in the Hobble Creek area, which is the Wasatch West and our NEBO units. And maybe a solution or just something that we would like to see rolled in maybe to some of these changes is to move those bait stations and where you can start running hounds farther away from developed areas as far as housing goes, summer housing, full-time residences, campgrounds, back. Now, I know that we have a half a mile set when you come in to get a bait permit. You have to be half a mile away from roads, campgrounds, residences, things, you know, where folks are going to be. I'm not sure what the division has. I think it's actually closer than that. But we would like to extend that farther away, because we're pretty sure that some of our problem in Hobble Creek came from the bait station that was a half a mile away from homes, the campground, you know, not from those homeowners. So that would be something, if we're going to allow some of these changes, that we'd like to request that we move those bait stations, or, you know, out at least a mile, as well as when they can, the distance of where they can start running those hounds, because we're seeing, you know, a big problem with, you know, in when you look at where we've allowed the bait stations and where we're having these problems, we see a direct correlation with the bait stations and the human bear conflicts. So we would like to ask that we maybe put a provision in there as well to maybe move those areas back to try to resolve some of that conflict, but allow some of these changes to be made.
John, do you want to respond?
Yeah, it might be good to address this one in particular, because this did come up in the last board meeting, where there were issues where was one issue in particular where we did deny a COR, certificate of registration for a bait site, and that was greater than a half mile. Now, one of the things we realized is that the half mile, 100 yards, those numbers that are in our booklets are minimums. And so each of those CORs is reviewed at the specific at level of where that thing is. So they have to coordinate with Forest Service or BLM or whatever, and they have to coordinate with us. And I just actually wrote that language this morning that'll go into the revised proclamation that'll indicate that we need to assess other factors. Those ones in particular will be rolled into it. So we actually are kind of already taking care of that. The rule gives us those minimums, but doesn't give us those maximums, and we're allowed to make those individual decisions based on that. So we've kind of got that covered.
Okay. And along with that, it might be a good idea to put another little asterisk. I know you have them for some of your hunts on, you know, just because you have a tag does not necessarily mean you're going to have access to some of those areas. It's all based on snow load, that kind of thing. And a minimum, even though we say you need to be a half a mile away from Kelly's Grove, from these residences, in a winter like we had last year, I personally highly doubt that bait station was a full half a mile away. It's a long ways to walk in that much snow. So as long as we're taking that into consideration, then I think we'll be happy with that.
I have a question.
George?
On your spot and stock, do you have a best guess of the success of a spot and stock hunter?
Yes, again, we've got neighboring states is 12%, or Colorado. Our best, in Utah, where we can do the Bookcliff one, 2 years ago, there were 7 permits issued. There were 3 taken. Last year, there were 0 taken. So we're somewhere between 0 to, 40% or something. For spot and stock, that's our expected.
14 permits, 3 were taken.
Yeah. You can look at it that way.
About 20%. In a row.
Chris?
Yeah. So the way I'm understanding it, maybe you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong here, John. I think that we do have a good plan in place, and I think I personally believe in the plan. However, having looked over the plan, I haven't seen anywhere that says if we get 20 complaints this year, we've got to reduce the season down to two weeks. So what I'm getting at is we've got some wiggle room within that plan, and I think the recommendations that have been made, the 4 tonight, all seem to be within that wiggle room. And so I'd like to make a motion to accept the 4 recommendations proposed tonight.
Okay, there's been a motion by Chris to accept basically the 4 recommendations, 1 from the Bowman's Association, 3 from the Houndsman. If I need to repeat those, I can, but if everybody's clear on what those are, I would just go ahead and see if there is a second to Chris's motion. And there is a second from Matt. Rack members, everybody understand what the motion is and what you'd be voting on?
Can we get some clarification on that?
Carl?
Are we just voting on those four? If we have some additional things we'd like to discuss, would you like them added before this motion or after this motion?
I think Chris's motion is to accept the division's recommendation other than those four changes. So I think it would be appropriate, Carl, if you want to talk about any other changes, we would then be voting on the division's recommendations.
Then let me bring up one more change to see if we can add it to this motion.
Okay.
Having worked through the issues with baiting that Sarah discussed on that, one of the problems you have with that is the early closure. We've talked a lot about nuisance bears. One of the biggest things that we get, or comments I get, is how come we have ADC killing so many bears and not sportsmen? That it all comes into we're closing that season too early. If we go to a mile, you'll eliminate baiting on all these Wasatch units. You just won't find a spot because the gates aren't open on that. If we extend the season to June 10th, the gates will get open. The hunters won't get nervous about that. It gives them some time to get up into the other areas. It'll give them some room on those units to expand out, to get away from the campgrounds. Right now, with the winters and the early or the springs we've got, the hunters don't want to hunt right down low. They don't want to hunt there in Oliver. They just can't get anywhere else. And so with my recommendation is that on the units that we're already extending in 5 days because of nuisance bear problems, that we extend that season to June 10th.
Instead of
June 3rd.
Okay.
That will alleviate a lot of what Sarah's talking about. It will address the nuisance bear issue that we talked a lot about. Address the concerns by the sportsmen of how come ADC is killing so many bears and we're not putting an opportunity for sportsmen. It addresses all kinds of things with that, and we all know that's a prime time for bears, and it'll address a lot of these issues and it resolves a lot with the sportsmen.
Okay, thank you, Carl. We can do RAC members. We can do this two ways. If Chris is willing to accept that as an amendment to his motion. And Matt's willing to accept that as a second, we can roll the whole thing into basically five recommendations, one from the Bowman's, three from the Houndsman, and Carl's extension recommendation, and then we can vote on the division's plan with those five changes. And Chris is okay with that. Matt, are you okay with that? Okay. Further discussion?
Yeah, so it's a all or none, right? So, like the Houndsman Association, the number two, to decrease the permits from 30 to 10 on the spot and stock. We have to vote on all of it or none.
I think that's the motion and the second. So if you don't like some parts of it, then you can go ahead and vote no, and we can work that out. If you're comfortable with all five of the recommendations, and then we're basically voting on the plan with those five recommendations. Clear? Okay, all those in favor? Two? Opposed? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Okay, two in favor, five opposed. That motion goes down in defeat, and we're ready for a new motion. Carl?
I'll make the motion that the first four items are intact, but we approve the 30 tags on spot stock on the San Juan and the Slosan.
Okay, run that by me again.
Extended for the fall on the LaSalle, the San Juan for the fall hunt that the houndsmen are asking for, that the division would get the 30 spots.
And how about your recommendation?
Extended to June 10th on the nuisance extended, 12 nuisance extended.
Okay, so if I understand, your motion is basically...
Or would it be simpler if we broke this up into five motions?
Let's try this out. Your motion is basically Chris's motion, except on item 2, where the houndsmen were asking for 10, 15, and 20, your recommendation is to go ahead with the division's recommendation on 30, 30, 30, but with the other recommendations from the houndsmen and the bowsmen in place, your motion is to accept those.
Yes.
Okay. I want to make sure we're clear in terms of the minutes, so I'm going to restate it. Okay, Chris's motion is to approve the division's recommendation with these exceptions. One, on the LaSalle, the dates would be changed from, instead of from August 20th to September 2nd, they would be August 18th to September 20th. Two, Wasatch Current Creek would be changed from harvest objective to female quota. Three, the houndsman's recommendation on the two hunts and the seven harvest permits would be changed.
Right, I'm going to withdraw that. I think we need to handle them separately.
Okay.
Okay,
let's go ahead then and have a motion on the date changes for LaSalle, San Juan.
Okay, now who's making the motion?
We're going to do that. Is there a motion to change the dates on the San Juan and LaSalle?
I'll make the motion.
Okay, there's a motion from Chris to change the dates. There's a second from Carl. All those in favor? Opposed? Okay, that passes 8-1 to change the dates on the LaSalle. Okay, got that? Second of all, is there a motion to change the Wasatch Current Creek from harvest objective to female quota? Is there a motion to do that?
Make that motion.
Chris makes that motion. Is there a second? That second by Matt. All those in favor?
Hold it. I have a question. If it's female quota, you wait till you have a certain number of females harvested and then you stop?
Close.
So you could theoretically have several males harvested, but when three females are harvested, you stop.
That's the way it works. Okay, we've got it.
Sorry, the motion that I was making was to add the archery-only hunt as proposed by the Bowman's Association. So they've proposed...
Okay, we'll get...
That's what I was making a motion on, so I apologize if I was missing it.
Okay, so... So, okay, we're talking about Wasatch Current Creek, and the Bowman's motion is to have to divide in two hunts, and the houndsman motion is to change from harvest objective to female quota. Your motion is to adopt the Bowman's.
Correct.
Okay, the Bowman's recommendation. Is there a second to that? Second by Carl. All those in favor? Four. Carl, Matt, Chris, and Sarah. Opposed? and 5 opposes, and that motion fails. Is there a motion on the Houndsman's proposal to change the Wasatch Current Creek from harvest objective to female quota? Is there a motion for that? Okay, Matt makes that motion. Is there a second? Second by Chris. All those in favor? 1, 2. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 2, 4. 7 opposed. Matt and Chris were in favor of that. Sarah, you were in favor? So there were only 2 in favor. And 2 opposed. Okay, then I'm ready for a motion to accept the rest of the plan. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there a motion on Carl's plan to put that the date from June 3rd to 10th? Is there a second? Second by Larry. All those in favor? Opposed? 7 in favor, 2 opposed, and the 2 opposed are Matt and Tim. Okay, I'm ready for a motion to accept the rest of...
One more thing.
Yep.
I need to... Who made the motion on this one?
Carl made the motion. Seconded by Larry Fitzgerald.
Okay, I just don't know the names.
Great, thank you for holding us accountable. Okay, I'm ready for a motion to accept the remainder of the division's proposal as recommended, as presented. Motion by Richard, seconded by Duane. All those in favor? Opposed? And that passed unanimously. Thank you, audience, all of those who made recommendations. We appreciate you being here. And we will move on to our last information item. And Jim, you're up.
How'd that go?
Okay, people, we need to move on. Can you take your discussion outside or sit down? Okay.
Give me your up and press.
Okay, Jim, have at it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the RAC, DWR staff, and those in the audience that are still here, we're presenting recommendations tonight on our associated with the 5-year review of Rule R-65720, which is the rule that regulates the practice of falconry in the state of Utah. There are specific pages of the rule with changes in your packets. There's also what came out with your packet is two tables on the very last page, but I've left at each of your places a single page that's maybe a little bit formatted a little bit better for your reference, and we'll be I'll be referencing those as we go through the material tonight. What I'll be presenting is a little bit of an overview of the practice of falconry in Utah. Some of you were not on the rack the last time the falconry rule came around, so I'll touch a little bit on the state of falconry in Utah today. Also, there have been a lot of actions that have taken place since the last review of the rule, not the least of which was the rule was completely changed 2 years ago to comply with some new federal standards and some other recommendations that were made at that time. And then we'll present the revisions on the falconry guidebook book tables, and then the summary of our recommendations will be the last thing that I present to you. One thing that was done when we revised the rule a couple of years ago was falconry was essentially redefined by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and we added a little bit to that language for Utah. The point to make is we emphasize actually taking and pursuit of wild game with trained raptors. That's the sport of falconry. There's also language that includes husbandry, caring for the birds, training the birds, transporting the birds, and so forth. But the emphasis is on hunting with these birds in the sport with the individuals that we have in the state that are practicing today. We've got about 190 licensed falconers. Your region has the highest number. Central and northern regions have, obviously from the chart there, is more than any other regions in the state. And Davis, Salt Lake, and Wasatch counties, those three counties alone account for about 85% of our licensed falconers today. There are three classes of falconer. This hasn't changed for quite a number of years since there's been a rule in place. The classes are based on age and experience. The entry-level class is referred to as the apprentice class. We have 46 apprentices in the state today. After 2 years of experience with a sponsor, they can qualify for upgrade to a general class. We've got 71 general class falconers in Utah today. And then after an additional 5 years of experience without a sponsor, they can request upgrade to the master class, and we have 74 master falconers today. Since the last review, some fairly major things have taken place. Previously, the falconry in Utah, as well as all of the states, in order for an individual to be legal to practice falconry, required both a state COR in our case, as well as a federal permit from the Fish and Wildlife Service. In September of 2008, the federal rule changed. Basically, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided to get out of the falconry business and would no longer regulate falconry in Utah and the other states, and gave states a deadline of 2014 to be in compliance with some new standards that they set in order for that change to take place. In January, we came around in 2009 with a revision of our rule to comply with those new standards. And in January 2010, our new rule was approved by the service after it had gone to the RACs and to the Wildlife Board and was approved statewide. So it's now regulated solely by the states. No federal permit is required. There is a limited take of wild raptors that was dictated by the services rule, and there are specific restrictions by falconer class. The falconers can now report their activities electronically. That system was not available before. The banding requirement was relaxed, and we basically complied with the services recommendations. The falconers do have an option to put in a microchip if they wish for some species, or for those that even aren't required to band, we'll be happy to do that. The facilities requirements were relaxed in that now these birds can be kept in a residence. That was a little gray before, and the service basically came out and said, yes, you can keep these raptors in a residence. If you do so, though, the residence has to be subject to inspection under normal inspection procedures, and I'll get to inspections in just a little bit more. Some new definitions were added. And then we did make a change on the general and master class CORs. We now offer a 5-year COR if an individual wishes to do that. It's a little bit simpler overall. We did have a three-year COR for the apprentice class before that. Since 2010, not since the last review, but even since 2010 when our new rule was put in place, there have been a few additional things, and that is the gist of our recommendations tonight with the five-year review. The editorial corrections and clarifications, there's some references for you there in the plan. Those are pretty straightforward. It's mostly just a little bit of house cleaning on some terms and clarifications of section numbers and so forth. One of the major things, though, right kind of in between all of this, the minimum age for practicing the sport was reduced from 14 to 12. And we already have that in another part of state code, so our recommendation is that we revise our rule to reflect the change in minimum age to go from 14 to 12. There was some change in scientific nomenclature. The order Falconiformes was divided, and no change in the numbers of the species of birds involved, but it's just scientific terminology was changed, and we wish to comply with that. And then clarification on take and possession of raptors. One additional list that the service maintains is a list of birds of conservation concern. The service restricts those birds, access to those birds by apprentice class falconers, but not to general and master class falconers. And so we're making that change in the rule as well. And this goes a little bit back to the guidebook, the tables for the guidebook that I handed out earlier. The two major exceptions are with golden eagle and peregrine falcon. But with the apprentice class, they are not allowed to possess the nestlings, go out and take a bird out of a nest. They're also not able to possess an imprinted raptor or any hybrids of North American species. And also, they cannot possess any wild-caught species of those birds listed by the service as a national species of concern. General class falconers can possess any of those birds except eagles. And master class falconers can possess eagles, but only golden eagles. They can't possess bald eagles. And so really the only list difference in those two tables that you have is golden eagles are not available for, for apprentice class falconers, but they are available for master class falconers. More on the text of the rule. So there was clarification on replacement of wild-caught raptors. They can only replace two wild-caught birds within a given year. If a bird becomes sick or is lost or whatever, they can replace up to two. Sale and barter of captive-bred raptors is limited to general and master class falconers. Facilities inspections. We did allow a written or email notification of the region where the falconer lives, but in practice, it's kind of come down to phone calls. So we now want to reflect call-in requests for inspections as our general practice and change that in our rule to reflect what we're doing today. The writing with letters and emails didn't work as well, so we're just going to go to a call-in procedure. And then the guidebook tables, the revision on the guidebook tables. And the last of what I have will reflect specifically on the species listed in the guidebook tables. Again, golden eagles are only available to master class falconers, but they cannot possess the eyes as the nestlings. The golden's right out of the nest. Excuse me. Harris's hawk is not native to Utah, but it's one of the most popular birds that the falconers use. Very, very popular, in fact. But they can obtain those from captive bred stock, from other falconers, and they can go out of state and bring those birds back in with permits, of course. Same with roughlegs. Roughlegs only occur in Utah in the winter. But they are available from other sources, and so we allow them to take roughlegs for falconry, ferruginous hawk. Those are native to Utah, but they're also on our state-sensitive list. And for now, we're limiting take to or limiting possession from those birds obtained from breeding stock or from other falconers for that reason. Gyrfalcon also is not native to Utah, but they are here in winter and are available in winter and have been caught in winter for use in falconry. And they're also available from captive stock and some of the same sources. And then peregrine falcon, again, the limits mainly with apprentice class falconers. They can only possess a non-imprinted, non-hybrid peregrine that's obtained either from captive stock or from other falconers or from other states. So in summary of our recommendations on the editorial corrections and clarifications that I've already that are in your packet with the rule, lowering the minimum age from 14 to 12, the change in scientific literature with the taxonomic orders to reflect that change, and then the take and possession and replacement, sale, and facilities inspection recommendations, as well as those in the guidebook tables, are what are we're recommending tonight for the five-year review. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Jim. Questions or clarification from RAC members?
I have a question. Is there a cap on how many permits are available? I mean, could you go up to 500 falconers in the state if you wanted to? I mean,
well, there's no cap on the number of falconers, no. Just that's as many as we have that apply to participate in the sport.
Have you noticed numbers going up, down, maintaining? I mean, what's...
A little down. A couple of years ago, we were up around 250, and that was November's numbers, as of November, so it's pretty close to the end of the year. It's been going down a little bit the last few years, yeah.
Richard?
Yeah, I just had a question, and maybe it's a little bit off the subject, but is it still against the law to possess the parts of a raptor? Like, say, you see them on the highways outside, you get killed. You can't pick them up, right? Is there any process you can go about to get one of those if you want to have them mounted?
There is. First part of your question, it is illegal to possess those parts. Yes, you can apply for permission to do that, but you need a good reason.
What's a good reason?
Education, if you're qualified to do education at school groups or use them in some way. It's getting a little iffy if you just want to go have one mounted. The service is not going to issue those like they used to. So it'll depend on what you really want to do with them as to whether the service will allow you to keep them or not. And then we usually comply with the service's recommendations with our COR. That's still a two-permit system.
Matt?
Are those the only birds that you use? I mean, are there any owl species that you can use as well?
Right. Other than the exceptions I mentioned, all of the species in both of those orders, the owl order was not on the screen, but the nocturnal owls are considered nocturnal species, are under a different order, and falconiformes, before it was split, either way, those orders are the diurnal day-active raptors. Yes, all of those are available with the restrictions that I mentioned. It's just typically the falconers don't use the owls as much as they do the diurnal raptors. So some do. Some keep a couple of owls, but most of them are with the diurnal raptors.
Other questions? Are there questions from the audience? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the question period.
Chuck Smith.
Dwayne.
How do you deal with your inspections?
The COs perform those. The falconers call into the region where they live, request the inspection, and then the COs charge to go out and conduct that, and then we make that a matter of record in their folder. We're looking at the inspection program. It needs a little TLC. So, but we're it's a CO process.
Ben, are you still here? thanks for waiting.
Found out all kinds of things about bears tonight.
You did indeed. maybe more than you want to know.
Yeah, I'll be having nightmares for months, and everybody did incredibly well, and nobody's dead. That's good, right? So my name's Ben Woodruff. I'm from representing the Utah Falconers Association, and also myself. We completely support everything that has been presented here. If you think all the bear stuff was bad, you have no idea all the nuances. Imagine if every bow and every gun for those bears was a living creature. Those, for example, the inspections indoors, we weigh our birds two times a day at least with digital gram scales. And if you have some of the smaller birds, sharp-shinned hawks, merlins, kestrels, outside, then their weight fluctuation is going to go all over the place with temperature. So some of these changes not only reflect the hunting, but also more importantly, the health of these birds. We fully support these, and not only has Jim done an immaculate job of trying to cover everything, But he's also put wording. If you read all these packets he's given you, he has done an incredible job of wording to make sure there are no bad loopholes. So if there are any bad apples, that can get snatched up. And if there are things that have not been thought of, that those can be taken care of. Some of these changes and some of these, a lot of this, as he mentioned, is just housekeeping and making sure we're in compliance with the code that's currently already in. But it's a beautiful job. The Utah Falconers Association especially appreciates the fact that the sponsorship is huge. That's something you don't have in any other form of hunting. For a sponsor to help make some of these calls and some of these lists on species, you're never even going to see. But a sponsor has to help an apprentice decide these things. And if the sponsor says no, then the apprentice doesn't get to do some of these things. So it's a time-honored tradition of the way of doing things. So we completely support it. We're grateful for the division for working with us on this and for Jim for all his hard work and effort putting this together. I also was asked to represent Great Basin Wildlife, which Patty Richards is here. She asked me to make one comment that doesn't necessarily apply directly to the laws, but a note for when these other laws do come up, and that is the age limit for falconry for an apprentice is 14 under supervision, and it's been lowered to 12 under that supervision. And the comment that she wanted me to make is that right now for an educator with an education permit, their sub-permittees under their supervision need to be 18. So when those laws are under review, I've been asked to make sure to remember that the division is aware that under supervision, somebody of the age of 12 or 14 could cover that. And that should also perhaps be the case, a younger age, for sub-permittees for education. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ben.
Mr. Chairman, I can offer one comment.
Yes, please, Jim.
And thank you, Ben. The minimum age, if they're under 18, we do require that a parent or guardian sign for them to participate and to cover any liabilities that would result from someone being under 18. So that's already in the rule.
Thank you. I see a motion over here from Larry.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion, but Ben, I don't know if you're involved with the guys that go out and fly them in rush or not.
I go out and attend that, the Sky Trials.
Yeah, I thought maybe you could extend an invitation for everybody to go out and watch that.
There's two events we have coming up very quickly. The first one is Winterfest, which is in January, and that is in Sandy, January 28th at Lone Peak Park in Sandy is a free event, and anybody's welcome to come. We'll have a large number of birds there. It's free. It's a chance. If you can come, that is a fantastic event for people and the public to be educated. It's a little closer to home. In February, I believe it's the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, we have the Utah Sky Trials, which is a world-class opportunity to see falcons diving from 2,000, 3,000 feet and going full speed. It's amazing. It's a little bit more of a drive. It's in Rush Valley past Fairfield. That costs a few dollars to attend. If you look up the Utah Sky Trials online, Utah Sky Trials will have that information. But we welcome people to come to those events and see these birds in action, flying free, just like a wild bird. That's kind of glorified bird watching. They just come back when they're done.
Thank you.
Ben, tell them to shut the gates when they leave.
Please.
You had a motion? Others who want to comment?
I'll talk in the microphone. I'm Craig Bonham. I just wondered if falconers need to comply with the same rules that other people do when they hunt pheasants and ducks and the same seasons and the same possession limits and all of that. I was just curious about that.
Jim?
Yes. Yes, they do. There is an extended on waterfowl. I believe that they start early on waterfowl, right? But other than that, it's the same seasons.
Bagging
all, it's the same, yeah.
Just you can't put your bird on the shelf and keep it there for the summer.
With all the firearm hunters and all that.
Yes, sir. And things do happen sometimes. Most of the time it's an accident, but not always.
Motion from Larry Fitzgerald.
I make a motion to accept it as a division.
Second from Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, everybody, tonight. It was well done. Two things.
Thank you.
One is we will be meeting on February 7th, right here. We're going to be meeting at 6 o'clock. There will be dinner served from 6 to 6:30, compliments of the division. And then at 6:30, we will have our agenda. It will be a meeting that is advertised, not a closed meeting, it's an open meeting, but the agenda will be set by you guys, and we're going to need to do that pretty much by the 1st of January so we can give notice. So if you have recommendations on what you'd like to talk about for our February meeting, get back to me or John Fairchild, and then put on your calendars Tuesday, February 7th, 6 o'clock, dinner, right here.
And it will be in this.
And finally, on your way out the door, back to people, there's a little gift from the chairman tonight you can take with you. It's a little bit of this year's elk hunt.
Nice.
Thanks, Fred.
Is that what we're going to have for dinner on the 7th, too? Maybe elk harvested in one such county.
You betcha.
Probably 40 total. I think that's good. 20 public, 40 total.
Yeah, we can do that.
I got to let you know.
Right.